Good morning. No, microphone's all back there. So that means I have to stay in one spot. And that could be difficult for me. It really could be. One other thing before I start is that my eyes are bad this morning, really bad, dry and hurting. And I may have a hard time reading, okay? It is a chronic problem, but not that bad. I always carry eye drops with me, and I didn't today. So I hope it won't distract you. Turn this morning, would you please, to Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. Interesting book. I try to read it through twice a year. I like to read it through and just take my time, do some thinking, pause, think about things, look at what's going on in the world, and look at what Christ has been able to help me to do in my life, and I'm thankful for it. So I'd like to take some time into this. Basically, some introduction, just some little talk, and some thoughts for you. Solomon wrote this. Some think he wrote it when he was an old man. Well, I think he wrote it perhaps in midlife, more in midlife than anything else. And we read about Solomon being a wise man, and the world being in awe of his wisdom. He was chosen by God to be the king of Israel, and he was a good king. But even when you read in the book of 1 Kings, you begin to see some flaws, some problems. As wise as he was, as powerful as he was, as productive as he was, with all of the projects he did, building of Israel strong, armies, it seemed to me he had some problems. And you begin to see that the end of his life wasn't really as good as the beginning of his life. I like to think he wrote this book after going through some crises, some times of searching, when he began to realize, what have I done? And what is all this about? And what is my life about? And what is the life of anybody in this world without God and Jesus Christ? But you can see at the end of his life that he suffered some problems, some consequences for this time when he lost some of his ability to be wise, to think things through. And so I think it's an interesting book. And as I said, I like to read it a couple times a year, just sit back and read it and soak it in and be in no hurry and try to understand it. Now, I have some verses I'm going to quote, but I'm not going to go out of this book. If any verses we look up will be in this book, should be easy enough for you to follow. But I'm not going to make you turn to other portions. I'll just quote them or give you an idea of what they are. And so he writes this book, and I think it's interesting. He starts off by telling us what he discovered. That life is empty, futile, that no matter what you accomplish, you seem to end up empty. You seem to end up at a loss. You know, we read the papers today. We're reading about all these politicians. We're reading about rich men. We're reading about businessmen. And then we're finding out that while they're doing many things in this world, one man had a big mansion in Florida, and that was for special people, for special experiences, to waste their time and their money doing things. Eventually, he was exposed, and he's in jail, and he's supposed to go on trial, but there's a lot of people who wouldn't want him to be on trial. Names and things will come out. So he kills himself. There's a little rumor that he was murdered. I don't know. But he kills himself, and that's his life. Ends up some Hollywood producer for years who's been a big man. Suddenly he's exposed, and everything is wiped out. He's lost reputation. He's lost his power over people. And these things are coming out again and again. And we have people who are in a mad rush to discover new things and create new politics and new things for us. And this book says there's nothing new under the sun, and there isn't. And it says if they often forget what was in the past, thinking they have discovered something brand new. But he says in his book, they haven't discovered brand new. They just forgot what the past was. They haven't looked in it. And they're on the same course. They're coming up with things they think are new, and they're just repeating again and again what has been done. So I find it an interesting book, and I enjoy reading it. So the preacher starts out in verse 2 and talks about vanity, and he talks about that, first of all, he says, nothing really changes. Now, he's looking at nature in first chapter, and he says, the earth abides forever, verse 4. The sun also rises, the sun goes down. The wind blows, it cycles. There's just things people can observe. And it seems to go on, whether the environmentalists are worried whether this world's going to end in 12 years or not, let them worry about it. I'm not. But the whole cycle people have discovered. A couple of years ago, I was driving through Wyoming with the Yarrows. We stopped in a little town to get gas, and I mean, it was really small. And stopped to get gas and a cup of coffee. It's called Ten Sleeps. Maybe you've been there. You've heard about it. It's called Ten Sleeps. And years ago, the Native Americans would come through there on their way to their winter headquarters, and they named it Ten Sleep because from there were ten sleeps. How did they know that? They watched the circuit of the wind. They watched other things going on. They knew it was time to go. Well, when you read the book of Acts, and it's interesting, some of the things about nature, you read in the book of Acts and Paul's trip to Rome, and the sailors are watching, and some winds begin to blow over the Mediterranean, and they decide, we either got to hurry up and get there, or we've got to stop for winter, because these are a sign certain things are going to happen. Right? So, the idea is that some things just continue on. All right, now one of the phrases in this book is under the sun, right? And it's a horizontal view, a horizontal view of the world and life, just looking at things the way they are. As far as this book is concerned, don't get caught up in theology. This book isn't a theology book. And some doctrines have come out of this book that are not biblical. Soul sleep is one that comes out of this book. There's reasons why people say that. And it's important to see it is not making theological pronouncements, even though you will find some things here that are solid and real. All right. For example, verse 4. All right. It says, one generation passes away and another generation for five, but the earth abides forever. All right. Now, the first part of the verse is true, but the second part isn't. The Bible talks about the world that will be judged, that will be new, this will be done away with. So that there are some things here we have to think about, but the point simply is that if one generation passes away, the earth does not remain forever. There will be a judgment, and God's going to come and work, and he's going to judge in this world. Right? So that's one of the things that is pointed out in this book. There are some things that appear in one verse that seem to be contradictory, but they don't. They are not. the best thing to do when you read this, if you find something that you think is a theology, something like soul sleep or other things, just be careful. It's not making these statements. They have to be cleared up with other points of Scripture. And these are important. And Lewis Schaefer, the founder of Dallas Theological Seminary, who, besides loving systematic theology, loved hermeneutics. To him, Bible interpretation was really important. The rules of how you interpret the Bible and how you draw conclusions. Here's what he said. I'm copying, taking this right from his book, so let me read it. Schaefer says, inspiration may accord the untruth, record the untruth of Satan or of men, but it does not vindicate the lie or sanctify it. There's some things in this book that seem, well, if that's true, then it challenges other theology. All right. But it does not vindicate the lie or sanctify it. It secures the exact record of what is said, good or bad. All it is doing when it records it is just saying what was said and what was true at the time of either person, good or bad. And you have to be careful when you get through here. All right. The book then is dealing with this problem of vanity, things under the sun. All right. Now, I'm going to tell you why I chose this. I don't know if I'm going to go over through this in the future. I don't have that many speaking engagements, and perhaps going through it would be tedious for you, having to go back and backtrack and summarize. But here's what I see. Some things are wrote down as to why I find this book valuable to study. All right. I chose the book because it speaks not only of an unbelieving world, and that's what it does, but a skeptical church. All right. I am not just talking about liberal theology of the church, things that are against the Bible, things that exclude the transcendent God, but I'm talking evangelicals and fundamentalists. Now, those are two words that are used among us to describe. They're evangelicals, they're fundamentalists, and the evangelicals come from fundamentalists and all of this stuff, all right? but an evangelical fundamental church that will not believe that godliness and contentment are great gain. That's one reason why, because we do not believe that godliness and contentment are great gain. And it is shown again and again and again how we spend our lives and how we spend the money. But godliness and contentment are great gain. Another reason is for those who still believe that the world can give us answers about life and eternity. We can go into it and find answers to life and eternity, looking for things and finding that the life on the natural realm does not give us answers, gives us questions, perplexes us, causes confusion. So that's another reason. There are people who have little education or few possessions who feel cheated in life because life twists and turns in difficulties. And they feel cheated and they need to understand something from this book that this is the way some things may happen. I had no choice, and you had no choice, who my parents were. Rose Orban and Johnny Duckhorn got married. And from day one, see, awful. Boozing, war, troubles. And I was born into that. And whoever they were at that time, I mean, you understand when I say whoever they were at that time, no choice. This is where I am. This is the way I'm going to be. This is the way I was raised. And I can't buy back anything and trade for anything. When I was in high school and coming to my senior year, I was planning, as I've said many times, to be a radio announcer. I was getting pretty good at some of this, but it didn't mean I'd be a success. I was just getting good at it, period, a little bit, young person, with a gift of gab. But I had some question in my mind, and I don't know how it got there, other than the only thing I'd say is God was working. That before I go on into my life, I need to have some questions answered. I wanted spiritual answers. I had read enough, seen enough, know that some successful people killed themselves. Successful people were shunted aside. Successful people drank too much. That even though it was a good career, somehow you could just lose it all quickly. There's always some young hotshot who's got a bigger mouth and a bigger gift of gab than you have that can do a better job. I wanted some answers. And the Lord led me to people at that time who shared the gospel with me, convicted me as I tried to run to California, away from Milwaukee, away from parents, the whole back life I had. Getting out to California and finding out this feeling in my heart, in my life, this emotion kept working until I turned right around and came home on a train. I felt like I could find no answers there. Then I came home and I called one of my buddies, a man I still have coffee with. We've known each other since we were 8 years old, and we still are friends. And my friend called me. He says, "Hey, Doc, I didn't see you in any movies. I didn't read anything in the paper, but you signed a big contract to hire." I went, nah, I'm not ready for that stuff. Like, nah, you don't find it. He was razzing. He said, "You know what? One of these Holy Roller guys, evangelical and fundamentalist, called me and wanted to take me for coffee tonight. And I'm sure he wants to testify to me." And right away, my heart skipped a beat. Whoa! And I said, not wanting to give it away, I said, "See if you'll pick me up also so we can have coffee with him." And in order to make my friend think that I wasn't seeking any spiritual insight, I said, "We can tell some stories, some jokes, and we can use a little foul language." And we did, to see if we could embarrass John Fisco. So when Mike called John Fisco, Fisco said, "Nah, I don't want to pick him up because Fisco liked to work alone. He's led a lot of people to the Lord." And then when my name slipped out, he said, "Oh, okay, we'll go get Duckhorn." I didn't realize that he had heard about me and all this stuff. It was kind of interesting. And to make a long story short, while we were there, and my friend Mike got up to go to the restroom, I quickly said to him, "You've got to lead me to Jesus Christ tonight. I want it now, tonight." And Fisco's eye, boing. He was, "Hey, oh, okay, okay." And after we took Mike home, drove to my house and led me to Jesus Christ. But what was the most shocking thing to me is that without any determination on my part or being able to see how God works, I remember saying, "I got to know the Bible. I don't know the Bible." "I know. Before I go to the school in Minneapolis, I'll call them and see if I can come in January." I call them and says, "I'd like to delay my entrance until January. If you would allow me," the man says, "we have an enrollment of a lot of students who want to come, and we need to honor that enrollment. Now, to go to this school, you had to go and you had to audition, go in the radio studio and strut your stuff." I made it, see. only there. My point as I talk here is that after he said, "No, I'm sure we can't do that. You should come, or we have a long list of people." Well, I'll study the Bible a bit. And within 6 months, I lost my total interest in being a radio announcer. It's all I lived for. Jesus Christ made a huge difference in my life. And this is part of the thing you see. What profit, verse 3, as a man from all his labor which he toils under the sun. What does he get out of it? Solomon saw, like a lot of people see, when they're great success and powerful, that they're empty. There's not much there. That there's fears, there's unknown. And it becomes a real problem, discouragement. So, first thing is, verses 1 to 4, nothing has changed. In this sense, the world and the cycles and the seas and the wind, and it just keeps going. It keeps going. One generation passes away and another, but this goes on and on and on. That hasn't changed. And so that people begin to see there's this cycle of life. And it says up here, I'm sorry here. It talks about verse 5, the sun rises and the sun goes down. The only thing that's sure. A Chicago reporter wanted to do a series on the philosophy of life that many normal, average people have. What keeps these people going? What's their philosophy? So he went and interviewed a lot of people and published it. The one I liked the best, and I think was most meaningful, was that he asked a man who worked for the Chicago sewer system. And he said to this man, what is your philosophy of life? How do you see life? He says, well, made it short. I dig ditches, right, so I can buy food, so I can get strength to come back tomorrow and dig ditches. And that's the way he saw life at that time. This is life. Dig ditches, buy the food, get the strength, and go back and dig ditches. I thought that was a good one, and I liked it. All right, so there's nothing new. Things keep going. There's really nothing new. There's young people forget. There's electronic gadgetry, and there's fancy cars, and there's all kinds of things. But by something new, these are just part of discoveries of some of the laws of nature, some of the laws of science. Thomas Edison said, those of us who are involved in inventions are only discovering secrets that have already been there. I had went to a man who worked at George Marshall Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, in the days when getting ready for the first rocket. And he took me to his office. He had a little office. Then he took me to the computer room. I've said this before, the computer room was probably three times this size. Huge, big real stuff. Guys running around, hot, see. And we got back to his office, and he said to me, John, one of these days, I've mentioned it before, all of that's going to be right here on my desk. All of it. I'll do all of that from my desk. And this is what he did with his hand, right here. I said, well, how's that? I don't understand how that could be. He said, no, it's easy. We discover one thing, and from that we discover another. We discover another thing, we discover that. It's just a matter of things that are there, learning how, as we go on, to put them together. See? And so this is what is happening today. All right. So verse 11, chapter 1 says, verse 10, I'm sorry. Is there anything of which may be said, see, this is new, there's already been in ancient time before? Politics, power. Right now, I don't want to talk about politics, but it's a good illustration. Right now, the idea is to throw out capitalism. It doesn't work. It never worked. It was based on some false premise of certain people who wanted to have authority over others, and we're going to go to socialism. Well, start reading some history. Start reading about World War I, World War II, the errors of socialism, the problems of socialism. It's just repetition of some of this. And there would be an attempt, and probably they would get to attempt everything they want. And there would be an attempt to bring it in, and they're going to run into the same problems and the same difficulties. There's really nothing new. So this is what is being said. And all of the gadgets, you and I, people pick the past apart, the heroes, the jerks, the movers and shakers, end up being mostly footnotes in history. Now we go back and we dishonor George Washington because of such a thing, and we dishonor this guy because of such a thing, because the premise they have is all based on one premise. And these men are forgotten. These men are gone, and it's easy to misinterpret them. So, I'm sorry here. verse 8, all things are full of labor, and man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. When Solomon tried to search, that's in chapter 2, and he tried to search. There's always something new. Years ago I read that the baby boomers were saving their money so they could go on trips. Some of them wanted to go around the whole, and they are, okay. Free country, that's not the point. But there's always some place new, something new to do, something new to have. You have to have it. And it's not satisfying. Oh, just the other day I was watching TV. I'm not even sure what channel it was because it was playing around, but I think it was a business channel. And the man was saying that the baby boomers, again, it sounds like politics. Not meant to be. The baby boomers have made a huge amount of money, and they're going to leave billions of dollars to their children. Man, and he said, it's going to be a problem. They don't know what to do with it. They won't know how to use it. They'll have too many hopes. And this guy was a Christian, an economist. We're going to have to teach them better about handling these things because they don't know how. They won't know how. I thought it was interesting. I only watched it for 10 minutes. Then I turned it off. It's closed caption and my eyes were hurting. Anyway, about 10 minutes. Leaving a huge amount of wealth. So there's verse 8, the eye's not satisfied with seeing. That's not enough. I have to see more. I have to have more. I have to have more. And along with that, the ear, the ear filled with hearing, verse 8. Gossip, we love new things. Never satisfied. All he's pointing out is that Solomon saw when he sat down in chapter 2 to do a search. He saw a certain thing that just kept going on in the world and on and on and on. We want to see new things. We want to experience new things. And so in verse 8, he mentioned that. Know the ear filled with hearing. I got to hear something new. I know there's gossip. I've got to hear this. I've got to hear that. I'm never satisfied with what I heard. There's more. And it's an endless cycle. Verse 9, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. There's a repetition of things. young generation today who are despising God and not seeking God, not interested in God, on a crash course for destruction or destroying people around them with their ideas, because there's something new all of the time. All right. So, I'm sorry. Verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new, there's already been an ancient time before? Verse 11, there's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of the things that are to come by those who will come after. Our history, who wants to study history? Our history is all wrong and corrupt. The point is, there's no learning, no understanding here. And nothing really is going to be accomplished without Jesus Christ. Yeah. Now, it doesn't say this in the book, of course. There's something else. Verse 15, let's jump all the way down there. Not everything can be corrected. Not everything can be made new. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. There are some things that just cannot be solved. There are some things on a human level, this kind of searching cannot be solved. It doesn't come up with solutions. One group is blamed for this, and then later on, this group will be blamed for that, because when they take power, this is going to happen, and this person does, and it's just a mad cycle. Some things cannot be straightened out. Early death of people, the tragedies in their life. You can't stop all of that. It happens. Life happens. And many other things that go on. So, verse 16, I commune with my heart saying, look, I have obtained greatness, and I have obtained more wisdom than all who have been before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and know madness and folly. I perceive that this also grasped me when I started my search, and I went, and I just can't get answers. Now, one of the answers near the end of the book, chapter 12, verse 1 is this. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when they say, I have no pleasure in them. Time of youth is the time to settle. I had no idea that night I accepted Christ as my personal Savior, that I was actually putting myself on a whole new course of life. And I began to see as I went on, certain things were settled. They were firm. They would not change. My life could be different. Even if I wasn't a missionary, I began to see how different it all could be. So, verse 1 of chapter 12. And remember the Creator in the days of your youth. All right. And it mentions the Creator, mentions God. The word that is used in this book is Elohim, and not Jehovah. So, this is extremely important here in verse 16 and 17 of chapter 1. Verse 18, for much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. People who are wise know that there are things that won't be solved and cannot be solved. Life is a dead-end stream. I saw it with my alcoholic father. I'm not bad-mouthing my parents. When I use these illustrations, people have said in the past, don't talk about them. I talk about them. The destruction of the early marriage, the alcoholism, the depressions, the inability to raise their children properly. I know, but it's truth. Amazing. that when I started my search in life to be a radio announcer, it abruptly ended one night. And little did I know that I was going to make a phone call in a few weeks and ask if I could come later, because I really wanted to read the Bible. And about a year later, I had totally forgotten that I wanted to be a radio announcer. I must understand this and what God wants in my life and how He can work, even if I stay at that machine at Alice Chalmers Tractor Division. I want to know how He can work. I want to find what God can do. So we also, one other reason for writing this book is about our young people, is that our young people raised in believing homes who have God's inspired word, who still feel they must rush headlong into life, and there they will discover the secrets that have eluded others, and they make terrible mistakes. The kid who comes from a broken home, the young girl who comes decides she must marry and have her own home to find the satisfaction, and finds out she makes the wrong choices, and finds out the fact that she's abandoned, and finds out anything. So this book tells us a lot of things. These young people, our young people going out to the search, must know that without God and Jesus Christ in their lives, they may be asking for a lot of problems. Denying God, ignoring Him, not allowing Him to work, not growing in Him, all right? So this is one thing, our young people. But what are they seeing from us? What are they seeing in our search for more material things? For more money, for more of these sort of things as being part of what is necessary to live this life satisfactorily. I was going to bring something to read this morning, and I didn't. But when Bill McDonald was 88 years old, well, we know, we have his commentary, he gave us a sermon at a conference. It was published in Uplook, Cornerstone, 6 months ago. And it was knock your socks off. Because here's an old man who's been a preacher for so many years, and he's telling the truth. And he's telling the truth. Our young people are going into the world bankrupt. We wonder why we're losing them. And he really slammed something. A lot of prestigious ambitions among parents that the kids pick up. Life is having all of this. Going to the proper place to study. You could look it up. You could find it. Maybe I could give references to it next time. But it's really a powerful paper to read. It touches all kinds of things. It touches our pride. And he's talking about the assemblies. He's talking about our pride that we have some truth that other churches don't have. The truth. Now all you have to do is go to big conferences and hang around certain ways. We see things they don't see. The pride we have in some issues. Well, all in here, I'm sorry. My eyes are really hurting. And in a year and 3 months, I'll be 80. And if I am still speaking, I'll make sure that the morning when my eyes are going out, I call Fred, because he'll be 80 anyway. I'll call Fred and tell him, put one of the hot shots in. Always have Giannini or Joe, one of his hot shots with sermons in their pockets. Okay, so it's an interesting book, and I rambled because I was having a hard time finding my notes. But it's interesting. Now in chapter 2, he starts a search. Chapter 2:1, mirth and pleasure. Chapter 2:4, building great works, big accomplishments. Talks about those and talks about all of the wealth he had, the things he owned, All you have to do is read in Kings. And you're amazed by the things he had, the incredible waste. That's what I like to think. As well as the fact that he had all of these wives and concubines. For what? For pleasure? For something new? I'm not satisfied with you anymore? Whatever it is. It is really interesting to read. And he went on a search, and after he searches in chapter 2, he makes it clear, I've come up empty. It's vanity. Father, thank you for your word. All of your word balances out. Whether it's Ecclesiastic, that seems to be pessimistic. Ecclesiastic, that seems to give no hope. Ecclesiastes that seem to be dark and gloomy, or whether it's the words of Ephesians in the gospel, all of these give us a clear picture of mankind and their need to be saved and their need for Jesus Christ and the fact that Jesus Christ gave his life. Father, thank you for this. Thank you for abruptly stepping into some of our lives and stopping us before we went too far and could never recover. I thank you for this in Jesus' name.